This is Feminist International Radio Endeavor. We are here with Katrina Fossi and Andrea Alvarado in the AIDS 2008 conference. And I'm very honored to be here with a group of South African women. And I will love that you introduce yourself and your organization.
My name is Azola Kotwana and I'm from South Africa.
My name is Patience Mandishona. I'm from Zimbabwe, the Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe.
My name is Cindy Blose. I'm also from South Africa. I work for the Treatment Action Campaign.
My name is Mercy Mwandonga from Zambia, and I work for a youth organization called Community Youth Mobilization.
Please tell us a little bit more about the work of your organizations.
Okay, I'm going to talk about JAZZ Southern Africa, the organization that I work for. What JAZZ aims to do is to work with women that are working within the HIV/AIDS field and that are HIV positive. And the aim of JAZZ is to mobilize women, the women that are working in HIV/AIDS, so that they can have a voice within the AIDS movement. Because within the years, the AIDS movement has been dominated by men a lot of the times. And because if you remember, when we first HIV/AIDS came out, a lot of the times people thought that the people that were most at risk were gay men. But now, with years, we realize that it's gay men and women and young girls. So what does that mean for us? It means that we need to go back and mobilize more women that are working in HIV/AIDS organizations, and so that we can get their voice, so that those women, the work that they do, is not managed by men, but it's actually the voice of young women. It's the women doing it for themselves and not the men doing it on behalf of the women. That's what just Southern Africa would like to do, to really mobilize the young women and the women within the HIV/AIDS field.
I would want to give the maybe LBT perspective to the whole thing. Like what Azula said, it's all about working for movement building for women affected and infected by HIV. And I would like to give the LBT perspective on it. In Southern Africa, it's all about the women, and the thing that has affected me the most within the conference that I've attended, it's all about people talk about all these preventive methods and how we can protect ourselves from HIV and AIDS, but they do not necessarily speak directly on LBT community, and I'm really affected about that, and it's something that I want to see discussed on a broader spectrum, and I don't know how we can do that.
Hi, it's Cindy again from TAC, the Treatment Action Campaign. In my organization, we advocate for the rights of people living with HIV and for better healthcare systems in South Africa, so that poor people can have better healthcare services and improve the infrastructure in the healthcare facilities. But in the South Africa constitution, looking at the context of the South African constitution, everyone has a right to life and dignity, and then we use that to advocate for the rights of people living with HIV to access treatment. We run programs at a community level to educate people about HIV and AIDS and treatment options that are available. We also teach people about preventions, and we are also lobbying and advocating for community initiated prevention strategies.
In my organization in Zambia, where I'm coming from, we've got programs where we help rural women access treatment. So we do treatment literacy program with young women in rural communities. I must mention that it's not very easy for women in my country, especially in rural areas where treatment is not readily available. So what in my organization, what we try to do is carry out treatment literacy campaigns. After which we try to make treatments available, not necessarily providing treatment itself, but making it easy for them to access treatment, know what kind of treatment is available for them, and the importance of them accessing treatment, and for them to go about treatment adherence. So it's basically a program for rural women to have knowledge on the available treatment that we have in our country, and how in turn they can educate fellow women, young girls on the importance of having access to treatment.
Want to ask, how is to be a woman, which age I be, even if you are or you are not, in your countries?
I'm the only woman with HIV that has come out in this group, and to be an HIV positive woman in Southern Africa, I think mostly it depends on where you are in Southern Africa and what you have, because what you have, I mean the money that you have, the education that you have, it will mean that you get access to the best doctor if you're more educated, which will mostly translate that you will have more money. And therefore, if you are a woman that's educated, that's got a good job, that's got all these good things, that's economically at the right place, so to speak, in Southern Africa, then it's what I think what the world is striving to have. The global world of AIDS. That's what we all would like to achieve, where women can decide to go to a certain doctor to get certain services that have to do with sexuality, reproductive health, and all those things. But if you are a poor woman within Southern Africa, then you face a lot of problems, and part of them is discrimination, because even the healthcare system, they think that they can decide if you should have so many children, or even if as a woman you should have children at all. So it's not really up to the woman, but a lot of people to take that. But at the same time, the people that think that they should decide if you should have children at all don't have a say when you get infected. They're not there to support the young women that get HIV positive every day. And I'm talking about the governments. They're so quick to decide that, oh, by the way, HIV positive women should not have children. But it's the same people that will not be there to say we need to protect young women in Southern Africa, because the men in Southern Africa think that they should tell their women when to have sex and how to have sex and with whom they should have sex with. So that's the problem right there, that they think that they can tell you what to do with your body, but they're not there to protect your body on what can be done with your body. So that's the difficulty of being HIV positive within Southern Africa.
Do you want to add something?
Yeah. It's Cindy Beck here again. I'm not living with HIV in my bloodstream, but I'm living with HIV in my community. I'm living with HIV in my family every single day. I'm living with HIV at work. I'm living with HIV everywhere I am in the world, and I cannot run away from it. Yesterday I learned that there's about 6 billion women that are HIV negative, myself included. And the question is, how are we going to ensure that more women do not get infected with the virus, which is a huge issue around sex and how sex is initiated between males and females, and the power relations between who has money and who doesn't. So those are the issues for me as a woman living in South Africa that are happening. And I also feel that I'm very vulnerable to HIV, because we have the highest rape in the world in South Africa. I could be raped at any time in my country, and the access to post-exposure prophylaxis is still a big problem in many government public health facilities, and we still get victimized by policemen when we go to report rape cases. So it's a big issue for me. I feel that I'm vulnerable, and I should be participating more in programs and activities that fight against HIV for both women living with HIV and women who aren't HIV positive, to make sure that we all live in a safer world as women.
Mercy, I must mention I'm not positive as well, just as my colleague said, but like she mentioned as well, I'm living with HIV everywhere, my family, the community where I'm coming from, and just generally everywhere. So it's something that I can't run away from. I'm very passionate about what I'm currently doing. And like I mentioned, I work mostly in rural communities with young women. And so the fact that these are communities that are mostly dominated by men, it means these women don't have somebody to talk on their behalf. And so I feel because I'm on a sort of advantaged position, I could be their voice and be the person that can help them address these issues that they're facing silently. And so I still feel somehow it also affects me. Yeah, and that's how come I'm here today.
I would like to go deeper in one issue, and this is the right of motherhood. Can some of you explain us a little bit more about the right to be a mother for a woman living with HIV?
A woman living with HIV is like any other woman. She has the same rights as any other woman. She is no different. She has equal rights. That does not change because of an HIV status. I'm emphasizing that. Reproductive health rights are for all women, irrespective of their gender, irrespective of their age, irrespective of their race, irrespective of their background. It's their right, period. And many women are denied their rights to reproductive health because certain healthcare workers feel that women living with HIV are at higher risk of dying or giving HIV to their children if they do fall pregnant, and this is a wrong perception. The truth is that women living with HIV can give birth to healthy babies with the help of the PMTCT program, which is the prevention of mother-to-child transmission. In Africa, we still have a problem where we're still using mostly monotherapy, which is just nevirapine, and we have now moving to dual therapy, which is nevirapine plus AZT. But we need to be in a world where women are able to access triple therapy, because it's the best therapy to prevent mother-to-child transmission and also to suppress the virus in the mother's body, so both the child and the mother can live a long life. So there is no excuse to sterilize women in public health facilities without their consent. It is a criminal act and it should be abolished.
If someone of you know about how many countries in Africa sterilize women, please tell us, let us know.
Very interesting question, because what you're saying is that if they give an opinion, chances are they won't be asked if they want to or not. But it's the healthcare worker who decide if, just because it's about how they feel and how the policymaker feels, if you should be having more children or not. So it's not about them being asked if you want a baby or not. Someone else out there within government or wherever, they decide that, look, it's not good for women who are HIV positive to have more children. So it's not about, so people mostly find out later on in their lives that, oh, actually I was sterilized. When they're asked to do that, they sign forms that they did not understand what they were saying. Because if you look in Africa, most women are uneducated. So this person will look at this person and assess and think, okay, fine, let me decide for you. You're not supposed to have so many children because you are this and that and that. And they label them in every way that they want to. But they're not really asking the person if you want more children or not. So it's not a matter of them asking them if they want to. It's them deciding on their behalf, and the women finding out later in their lives that actually they were sterilized.
Thank you, Asola. I'm here with Caterina Fossi, and she wants to ask something in Spanish with translation.
Tengo tres preguntas, pero voy a hacer una por una. Andrea preguntó tener hijos, pero también no queremos tener hijos. ¿Podemos optar por no tener hijos?
Thank you. I have three questions, but I'm going to ask them one by one. The first one being, you were talking about wanting to have kids, but what if we do not want to have kids? Is that option available?
In the case of South Africa, if a woman chooses not to have a child, she has the right to terminate her pregnancy according to the law. And I'm not talking about the backstreet abortions that is unsafe, that is practiced by people who are inexperienced, who do not understand women's health and anatomy. It is part of the government policy to provide safe abortions for women, and there are measures in place to ensure that the government implements that policy. But as civil society, we need to do more in monitoring those processes, because there are still many women in South Africa who are suffering from victimization by healthcare workers who impose religious beliefs on the women who come to the health facilities to access termination of pregnancy.
In Zambia, women do not necessarily have the knowledge on them having an option to have an abortion once they discover they're HIV positive and they do not want to have a baby. Abortion is available in government hospitals on condition that it's going to affect your health, so your life is in danger. But as far as I'm concerned, very, very few women are aware of that option. They don't have the knowledge to say, I have an option not to have this baby because I'm HIV positive. Yeah, so there's very little knowledge when it comes to that.
Otra cosa. Quisiera la relación de el SIDA y el racismo. Y estábamos hablando hace un rato en el evento en el que venimos, de que Sudáfrica es uno de los países que hay más violaciones y que es uno es el país con más personas con SIDA. Esto tiene que ver también con el apartheid, con todo lo que significó el apartheid y las implicaciones que tiene actualmente.
I want to ask about racism and its connection with violence. We were speaking earlier during the conference about how South Africa has the highest rate of rape, as you just mentioned, and is there a connection between post-apartheid South Africa specifically and violence against women?
Yes, I would say there's a link between the fact that we come from apartheid. There was violence. It was kind of like reacting against the government that was oppressing people. So it was a fight for freedom. But then even during that fight for freedom, as a child, I experienced many women being forced out of their homes to join marches that they didn't really understand what they were about, but they were told it's for freedom. And I know many political leaders who would rape women in my community, and the issue would be silent because they were leaders and you couldn't speak against those issues, or you would simply be shot in your head with a bullet. It was as simple as that. And then post-apartheid, there was the Truth and Reconciliation, you know, Commission that tried to reconcile, you know, the issues, all the trauma that people went through, but I feel that was not enough. There should have been a continuous process where government has a program at a community, at a very local level, that engages local people on the trauma that they faced during apartheid, and to deal with the anger and the frustration that they had then, so that this anger does not turn into rage that turns into violence, and then the violence that tend against vulnerable groups and communities, which is mostly the women and the children. So I feel that the government in that way in South Africa has failed women and children mostly. So that is the biggest concern, that it's still out there, and now it's also translating into xenophobia, where we feel that foreigners are taking our jobs, they're taking South African women, and yet the real frustration is around the lack of housing, access to water, proper sanitation, food, the very huge unemployment rates that is unprecedented, and that the government has not declared a crisis yet. So fundamentally, people's dignity have been compromised, and they are looking for something, you know, to bring back that dignity, and it's a big crisis in South Africa. So there's this anger that people don't know how to let out, because after the post-apartheid, we demobilized and we didn't organize. It's only few organizations like the Treatment Action Campaign that started mobilizing against treatment for HIV, but then all the other social issues, they are a very small organization trying to do something, but we're not a huge social movement like how we are during apartheid. So we need that kind of movement to arise in South Africa again, so that we can challenge the issues that affect us in our community, so that we can be a better and a just society. Because women are still viewed as, you know, subordinates, and then as carers, as the people in the background, and the men being the leaders, and that becomes a big part of the problem, because certain men in communities feel that they have a right to women's bodies and to decide what should be done with the women's bodies, and it leads to things like rape and physical abuse.
I assume that we are women crossing the line, and I wanted to ask, what is crossing the line for every one of you in your countries and in your communities and as a woman?
Okay, I have a tendency to talk too much. And again, I'm doing it again. Okay.
Thank you.
Maybe it's my calling, as they would say in my church. Yes, crossing the line for me is stopping the silence or ending the silence to start talking about issues that really affect us without any prejudice. And that is the biggest challenge, especially in my country, which is very patriarchal. And there are so many cultural and traditional norms that put women, you know, under the carpet, and the men on top of the carpet. And we kind of have to bear all the pain and everything because we're the natural, you know, carers. And for me as a woman, I don't think that is right. I do not deserve oppression. I do not deserve violation of my rights, and if my rights are violated and if I'm oppressed in any way, I have the right to speak out, and I choose to use that right, unlike many women who are feeling prejudice about using their right to speak out. So crossing the line for me, number one, is speaking out about issues that I strongly feel that are unjust towards women.
And crossing the line for me is just being myself. Just being a woman and not doing what the world expects of me, but what I feel inside. So that translates into many things, which could be not cooking, which could not be doing my hair, which could be not painting my nails, putting on lipstick, not wearing what's fashionable, but what I like as a woman, not being with a man, but choosing to be with a woman, just doing what I feel as a person, like dancing, like dressing the way that I feel like, that's crossing the line for me. It's really personal. Choosing to drink a beer instead of wine, choosing to drink a beer instead of a martini. So I think for me, it starts from inside and doing what I would love to do and really stepping out of that labeling that you're a woman, you are this, you're that, and therefore you should be acting a certain way. So for me, it really begins with doing what I'd love to do without worrying about what you're going to say or what the world is going to say or what the person next to me is going to think of me.
I think Azula has said everything that I wanted to say. Thank you so much. because crossing the line for me is like what you say, doing what I want to do, choosing who I want to be with, and not everyone determining for me what I need to do in my life. And I think I've crossed all lines, especially from the context of where I'm coming from, Southern Africa and Zimbabwe and I've crossed all lines possible.
Why?
Because for me, where I come from, like what I said yesterday, and human rights issues are not LGBT issues are not like human rights issues from where I come from. So if I have to talk about issues to do with lesbian women, bisexuals, transgender women, it's not an issue in my country. It's not a priority. But for me, it is. And maybe for a certain percentage of the world, it is. But for Southern Africa, it's not a priority, and it's not. And that's a subject that gets me upset and I cannot talk about. But at the same time, like what she said, it's a choice that we have to make, and it's a choice that I have made. I cannot get someone choosing who I want to be with, what I want to be, and what I can be in my life. It's a choice that I have to make for myself. And
right to have choices.
Yeah. And maybe in Southern Africa, we don't have that right. But I would want to see it happening in the next couple of years, I hope. I would want to have the choice to be who I am and say it out publicly, to say this is what I am, this is who I choose to be. But I cannot say it right now, and it's something that hurts me, I guess.
Crossing the line for me as Mercy coming from Zambia, I think it boils down to having equal space as a man. Like we said, AIDS is affecting women. And for as long as a woman is not involved, we will never get anywhere. And so for me, being able to sit on the same table discussing issues that are affecting me much more than a man is crossing the line. So the first milestone should start with me taking a step and getting involved in issues that men have dominated for so long, issues that are affecting me and I'm not able to talk about, and the person that talks about them is a man. And so I feel if I have to cross the line, it's me to talk about the issues that are affecting me, because I understand them better and I can talk about them in a more passionate way than a man would. So, and that would be crossing the line for me.
We have one more question in Spanish with translation.
Esta mañana nosotras estuvimos escuchando unas ponencias de mujeres jóvenes que hablaban de el derecho a la sexualidad, al placer.
This morning we were listening to young women talk about the right to sexuality and pleasure.
Eran universitarias, pero no tenían control sobre la prevención del SIDA. Ahora en la tarde, la última presentación de esta noche, una de las ponentes señalaba de que con más educación es posible que las mujeres podamos detener el contagio de esta enfermedad.
And although they were university students, they felt that they didn't have control over prevention methods. And this afternoon we heard in the conference with Stephen Lewis that if there were more education, they would have more access to methods of prevention that they could use, and that power was in their hands.
Pienso que hay como una contradicción. La educación no nos libra del patriarcado. Volvemos a nuestras casas y el poder de repente desaparece. Entonces, ¿qué más debemos hacer? Además de educarnos, es un buen paso. Pero algo nos falta. Si tienen algunas unas respuestas, sugerencias, caminos, luces, más o menos esta es la pregunta.
And I mean, the question is that maybe education really isn't freeing us from this patriarchal society when we go home and we're subject to this control over our bodies, over ourselves.
And what suggestions do you have for this issue? How can we take back that power and that control?
What patriarchy has done, which is the domination of men in simple terms in the world, it will take a lot of layers to undo. And maybe we're in the middle, and maybe we could be in the beginning within movement building within Southern Africa. And the work that we're trying to do to say that women need access to things, to life, to rights as men. And not just on paper, but in reality, in practicality. So there are all these layers that are there that patriarchy has taught us to be. That we are smaller than men, that men are greater than us, whichever way you look at it. So until, for me, until this, I don't even want an equal number of men to be deciding on what education should look like. I'd like to see 80% of women there and 20% of men. Because at the end of the day, when I go home, I get to do the homework with my son. I get to cook. So what goes on in that cooking class, I know what works for that man. And most of the time, he doesn't even know what works for him. But I know what works for him. I know what goes into fashion. I know what it makes to keep a home going. Because those are women that have not been educated. And we forget that, that keeps homes running. Who keeps the economical income flowing every time? It's women, educated or not. If a dollar is a dollar, you know that a dollar is a dollar, and you know what a dollar can buy. You don't need to go to school for that, do you? So many women have done it so many times. So for me, I'd like to see more women in those parliaments, more women in those policy makers, more women in everything. I'm emphasizing 18 women and 20 men. And we'll get the world right. And until we do that, we won't get it right. Because we're the only people that can tell our sons how to pleasure women. We'll tell them that you can't say a certain thing to a woman. She won't like it. And he'll ask, why are you saying that? And then you're the only person that can explain. The man will still give this huge explanation and whatever. Whatever he sees masculinity as. But we know what women want, and we know what works. We know which food to cook. At the end of the day, we are the engines of the home, of the economy, because we decide what to buy. As the women, we make all those decisions. So for me, it's to get more women in power.
My understanding of education is acquiring knowledge to improve your quality of life. That's the most important part of it. But we have different education systems in the world. We have the academic and the institutional one, where you go to grade one and then you graduate and then you go to college and then you get your BA and then you get your honors and your masters and you are told you're ready for the world. But I know so many women in the world who have their master's degrees or who just have their bachelor's degrees, who are becoming infected with HIV, who do not possess the life skills to survive in this harsh environment that we are currently living in, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. So that kind of education is not enough. We need more education that speaks to our lives specifically. Education that says, if you are a woman, you are most likely to get HIV if you have unprotected sex. That if you are raped, you need post-exposure prophylaxis, which is a combination of 3TC and AZT within 72 hours, or you will become HIV positive. If you are a woman living with HIV in your city for counties below 200, or you've had more than one opportunistic infections, one of them being major like TB or pneumonia, you are most likely on stage 3 and you should be starting ARV treatment. That is the kind of information that saves or sustains a woman's life that is necessary for women to access, and that falls under popular education, where we learn about our own experiences and then we find solutions to the problems that we face in our communities, so that we are more, I like to use the word, streetwise. We are better equipped to survive in this kind of world. So when I look at education, I look at it in that perspective where you are told what you can do to ensure that you survive. Because ultimately, as humans, we need to survive in this world. And if we don't have specific information about our own environment that will equip us, you know, to respond to the challenges that we face, as women, we will fail, even with our academic qualifications, as much as they are important for our economical benefits, because that also plays a very important role in terms of negotiating better relationships with our peers and also with our sexual partners.
Quiero recordar y agradecerles muchas gracias a las cuatro por estar aquí en Radio Internacional Feminista y recordarles que estamos en una transmisión conjunta con el Observatorio de la Transgresión Feminista. No quiero olvidarlo, aquí desde México, desde lo que es el Congreso Internacional sobre SIDA. Soy Caterina Fossi.
We want to thank you so much for your time. We have another special opinion, and it is from Julian. Julian, it's a 10 years old boy, and he wants to add something about this discussion. Julian, what do you think about that?
Okay, I'm Julian. I'm a boy, an oncoming man. I don't have any degrees. But what I would like to see from men in other countries is there's more the respect of women that they deserve, and because as Azula said, it's the women who always keep the house running. I know this because my mom is the backbone of our household, and I really appreciate that from her. And all this work she's doing, and with all these great women, is really, really means a lot to me. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much, Julian, and thank you all of you for joining us. This is Feminist International Radio, and they were broadcasting from the 2008 AIDS conference from Mexico City. Join us in our next broadcast, and thank you very much.